evening. Welcome to the Celery Report. Today is January 21st, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm back in Tennessee, and we're waiting for all the snow after 2 days of icy rain. I know those up in the East Coast of North America really getting the weather as well. So, weird weather with us again. I just got back from the Architects of New Paradigm. Very interesting conference in California. I'll talk a little bit more about it later. Upcoming events, I'm traveling next week to Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio. I'll be speaking both at the college and the Economic Roundtable of the Ohio Valley, which is in Parkersburg, West Virginia. My topic is thinking the unthinkable, and frankly, given the success that that community has had with oil and gas and coal, they're already managing the unthinkable with the enormous drop in commodity prices. So I'm sure it'll be a very rich discussion. Our theme tonight is, where is peak oil when you need it? The Iran deal went into effect, and of course, the oil price took another swan dive, and at the end of 2015, it was $36.61. It touched $29 on January 15th, and then this week I saw it touch $26 just briefly. A report that the Koch brothers refinery is now requiring people to pay them 50 cents to take North Dakota crude. So imagine where, you know, there are places where oil has got a negative price. It's really the perfect storm. I've talked about it before, but let me go through again. The first and big, probably number one item is global slowdown. First and foremost, China, their economic growth is the slowest in 25 years. They reported that for 2015, economic growth was 6.9%. Looks like a great growth rate to us, and it's in line with their target of 7%. But we expect for the China market to continue to be slow. We're certainly the growth to slow down, and that slowdown has affected both the stock market and their currency. Their reserves have diminished $700 billion last year, and it's accelerating in the beginning of the year. A few really indications of how severe the slowdown is. Walmart announced that they would close 269 stores globally, and that's 154 stores in the United States. It's about 3% of its locations. And then ISIS, believe it or not, announced it's going to cut its fighters' pay by 50%, citing exceptional circumstances. Again, a lot of their cash flow is coming from the oil. Another player, which is very hard to identify how much is doing what, is technology. And you've got a whole series of different technologies impacting the demand for energy. One, of course, is digital communications. With 3.5 billion people on smartphone, you have a lot more intelligence and a lot more networking that can optimize against the use of energy. Then you have probably the biggest has been the boom in drilling technologies and other technologies related to conventional drilling. Then we see greater efficiency in renewables. Now, with this drop in oil price, it's really going to make it that much harder for the renewables to get in the game economically. The batteries battery innovation has made a huge difference, including to renewables. There's a very good article in The Economist recently, it's called An Increasingly Precious Metals, about lithium and lithium batteries. We put it up on the website, so check it out. It's in Top Picks. And then finally, the big $64,000 question, the wild card, is how much of this is because the insiders know breakthrough energy is available or they're going to allow it to come, and it's very hard to tell. So technology in many different areas is clearly impacting the price. And then finally, geopolitics, the oil card, including the Iran deal with Iran oil coming back online and flowing into Europe. That's going to make it easier to keep the Russian sanctions hurting. But we're also seeing the drop in other commodities, agriculture, mining across the board. And there are many beneficiaries. The consumer is the beneficiary. We're getting reports of gas being less than a dollar per gallon around the country. Clearly, manufacturers are a beneficiary, but they're hurt plenty from a strong dollar. But every little bit helps. The problem is, if you look at the sectors that are affected, so the the oil and gas producers, the coal producers, agriculture and mining, they have tremendous debts. For example, the coal companies raised about $6.4 billion of debt in 2010 and 11, betting that prices for coal would rise, particularly given China's growing demand to build its cities. And now what we're seeing is lenders really in trouble as a result of that debt and the derivatives as well on top of it. So the problem is if we get into credit destruction and a cycle down in credit, not able to manage the debt, we're gonna face wider problems in the financial system. The junk market's down 16% in the last year. That's 4% so far this year. My biggest concern watching this is, given that we know that we had $40 trillion shifted out of the developed world, somebody sitting on an enormous amount of stockpiled cash or short-term fixed income, and this is going to be a perfect opportunity for someone to pick up a lot of valuable commodities cheap. Certainly in domestic oil and gas, you're going to see the majors able to consolidate and pick up and consolidate a lot of the independents. So, you know me, I'm always suspicious, and there are an awful lot of parties acting or talking the market down. So I'm a little bit suspicious of that. Clearly, when we hit a bottom in the emerging markets or commodities, whenever that is, there's going to be a real opportunity. Money and markets. The market is very nervous and in my opinion, overly so given the fundamentals, but let's talk through it. I mean, one obviously is the China economic slowdown and the capital outflow they're experiencing. Another is the emerging markets struggling with lower oil revenues and the banks struggling with the debt loads from the commodity producers. And that's not just oil and gas producers or coal producers. It's also all the sovereign countries and municipalities that depend on those revenues. We're also seeing a divergence in the central banking policies. So the Bank of Japan and the EU are still on their QE programs, but now the Fed is finished with QE and is raising interest rates. So we see a divergence for the first time in many years. Another big question is how strong is the EU going to be? It's remember after now China, the EU is the biggest consumer market. We great concerns about the future of the European Union as the UK potentially will have a referendum this year. So what will the UK's role be? And then what is migration doing to Europe? It's clearly an extraordinary burden on both the population and the leaders. We had the head of Davos warn that the current refugee crisis could be a precursor to something much bigger, saying that a collapse of the oil price in North Africa could send a billion people or more headed north. Now, I'm a little bit of a skeptic because those people need financing to travel as far as they can as Europe, and if you look at what's happening with refugees coming into Europe, there's somebody's financing it. But I think the biggest problem is leadership. And as I said, I think the market reaction is much greater. There's an overreaction given the fundamentals, but there's a breakdown of trust within and between leadership, and then within and between people, and between leadership and people. So I'm seeing a real breakdown of trust, and that's what concerns me. So I want to walk through that just a bit. First of all, there are just too many people making money by stealing and destroying pies, and it's not just in the leadership, it's in the general population. There are not enough people baking pies and free to do so without someone messing up and stealing their pie. So it really comes down in an economy to how many people are doing things that increase the total economic return as opposed to just increase their own return. So if you look at any of the things I've talked about with the Saleri model, the goal is to always increase your returns by finding ways of adding value to the total economic return. And where you have a tipping point of too many people destroying the total economic return and making money by destroying the total economic return, then you've got a real problem. And that's part of the leadership problem today. But let's look at some of the others. We're moving from a unipolar world to a multipolar world, and that has profound ramifications for leadership. Leaders who grew up and know how to manage in a unipolar world are uniquely not qualified to deal in a multipolar world. You've often heard me, I used to always say, those who play in a rigged game get stupid. The reality is when you're in a unipolar world and you can look to the hierarchy to tell you what's going to happen and to protect you, it makes life simple. It's one of the reasons U.S. leaders grossly oversimplify and look stupid to people around the world. And part of it is they've got that hierarchy, and that hierarchy is backed by force. This really happens where you have managed markets, because markets tend to reground. You know, they send a message back. They're constantly regrounding. Where markets can't work, you can get very, you know, the fundamental economics can get very, very far away from economic fundamentals. And that's part of what's happened. There was a comment by one of the commentators from the Fusion on the meeting of world leaders in Davos. And I just wanted to read it because it's a perfect example of what happens when you go to a unipolar to a multipolar world and people aren't ready for it. The bankers and policymakers aren't even faking it anymore and increasingly willing to admit that they have no idea what's happening and no idea what to do about it. Oil prices are at a level no one could have predicted just a few months ago. That's true, including me. And no one knows how long it will stay so cheap. That alone injects enormous amounts of uncertainty in the global outlook. After all, the oil price has a direct effect on pretty much everything. Wars in the Middle East, politics in Venezuela, terrorism in Nigeria, the likelihood of a global credit crunch, you name it. The oil and gas industry is responsible for most of the losses that fixed income investors have taken of late, and that's just one of many unknown variables out there. Very good comment. The other fear you saw expressed out of Davos was fear about robotics. There's an article we put up on the website, Davos Robot Eclipses Davos Man as Gloom Descends on Elite, from Bloomberg. You know, I think we've unleashed a whole world of technology. And when that technology goes to work in a multipolar world, you not only have many different power centers in terms of the political leadership, but now you have many different power centers in terms of the consumer market and what I call the field. I mean, you now got more than double the people on the internet in China than you have in the United States. And theoretically, those 3.5 billion people can communicate and trade with each other. So things can shift, and the variability of scenarios is much wider in a multipolar world. Okay, so let's keep going. Let's look at the failure of U.S. unipolar leadership. The world is dependent on the U.S. to manage the reserve currency and to manage the sort of the global military that protects the sea lanes and other aspects of security. The reality is we're all sick of the neocons. It's one of the reasons that the Iran deal was such a slap back at Israel and the neocons. But I think the world is sick of oversimplification combined with force. You know, I think part of what we're watching in terms of lack of confidence in the U.S. leadership is a real rejection of not only the neocon strategies, but of their culture. The second thing is the U.S. presidential damage, in my opinion, is doing enormous damage to the U.S. brand globally. We're watching a lot of childish behavior. We're watching front runners who are espousing policies which are certifiably insane. And we're watching a real inferiority of candidate, in my opinion. The reality is the U.S. presidency is not a entry-level position, and it's also not a position for people with huge negatives who've been racketeering for years. A lot of the older candidates belong in a unipolar world. They're not going to make it in a multipolar world. And one reason is you just, beyond a certain age, you don't have the physical energy to do it. And the reality is if you watch some of the behavior in the fourth quarter, I'll never forget when Trump went off the rails on saying Muslims should not be allowed in the country. He's basically saying 24% of the world's of the global population should not be allowed in America, which is basically saying, you know, to 20% or so of all the money in the world, leave. And I took one look at that and said, you know, if I was a global financial institution, I'd pull my money out of America. I mean, it's pretty scary. And sure enough, at the end of the fourth quarter, bam, what's happening? A lot of people are pulling their money out. And I flew back from California. So I never get colds, but of course when I fly, I get a cold. So that's why you can hear a cold in my voice, because I flew. And I change planes at DFW and walk through two terminals, and on every terminal monitor was Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump. And I have to tell you, you know, it looked like kindergarten. It was frightening. And all I could think every time I looked at it is, you know, the planet's going to pull their money out of America. Now, that's not necessarily making it true, but I have to tell you, there are money managers all over the planet who are watching this and saying, nothing good can happen when the global political leadership and financial leadership, you know, are not adult, or even the threat or possibility. So I think this is very, very damaging to the American brand and for leadership that would like to erode the U.S. government's ability to keep its contracts. This is all very convenient. It's too convenient. It's inconceivable to me that the candidates who are leading in the polls could lead in the polls without massive entrainment technology. So why this is happening and who wants this is pretty terrifying. And that's enough to terrify any money manager. Okay, another reason is financial leadership. There are too many speculators with too much money in the markets. It's part of loose monetary policy for many years. And they are disconnected from total economic return. If you sit down with the top pension funds, they are not disconnected from total economic return. They are deeply interested on how the economy overall works and that sensible policies happen. But you've got too much money in the hands of speculators who are just looking to, you know, get their quarterly fix. And the problem is when trouble comes, they cut and run and behave in very short-term ways. What that means is, as I said before, the possible scenarios in any particular market and the overall markets are there's greater variability, both up and down in terms of prices. And it's expensive for an enterprise and individual to alike to plan for or be prepared to manage that kind of variability. But it's the world we're going into, and in the middle of it, there's enormous opportunities. So I think it's very important in everything we do in our lives, in particularly in our local politicians or in any prizes we work with, anything you can do to support good leadership, the more of us who will support and really back good leadership, the more hopefully we can get that kind of ethic going virally. And again, what you want are you want people who care not only about the return to the enterprise, but the total economic return and take responsibility for the whole. In the wrap-up section on books for 2016, three of the books I chose were in fact on leadership, and I recommend them to you. Check out the books for 2016 in the wrap-up. The last thing I want to say about leadership is one of the most important conditions precedent to getting good leaders is transparency. I'm going to post my slides from the ANP conference that I attended this last weekend. And one of the things I focused on was the importance of transparency to getting good leaders. And I will put those slides and give a brief description up on the website if you're interested. I talked a lot about how to gather your power to live a free and inspired life and the role and the importance of creating transparency to help you do that. Okay, so let's turn to the markets, which is the topic on everybody's mind this week. The markets have been down and choppy. Of course, when you consolidate like this, you go down, then you come back up, then you go down, and the downs are more than the ups. Here's the reality. The S&P is under great pressure. If we break the 1860 line, which is basically the 2015 low, and we stay through it, we could be in for a 15 to 25% correction, a deep one. And given the frustration, there is a chance of a spiral down, even though the fundamentals do not support it. But if people are angry enough and negative enough, we can always talk ourselves into it. The S&P closed down today. It's down for the year 7.25%. We broke the 1860 line yesterday this week and then bounced back up through it. We closed at 1859 and then came up through it. So, but keep an eye on that line and let's see what happens next week. It's clearly under pressure. And again, it's down 7.25%. A 10% correction is perfectly normal. I really think a 5 to 15% is perfectly normal. But if you look at what's happening in the market, we could get 15 to 25. Gold now up for the year, almost 3%. Silver is flat for the year. Oil down 14%, and it's now down 80% in the last 2 years. That is absolutely stunning. The DAX in Europe, in euros, down almost 10%. Wait a minute, my page jumped. Down almost 10%. China, large caps, down 13.3%. The developed markets, minus North America, down almost 9%. UK and Japan now in a bear market. They're down 20% from their high. The emerging markets is down 9.6% for the year, and in the last year, it's down 30.42%. Again, I think at some point we're going to get some real opportunities there, but not yet. The bond aggregate ETF is now up 0.73% for the year. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is the star performer. It's up 3.87%. Earlier this week, it was up 5%. Junk, as I said before, is down 4% for the year, and it's down 16% in the last year. Commodities index, ouch, down 11% already this year, on top of what it was down the last 2 years. Very deep. U.S. dollar index is up a tiny amount. It's basically flat for the year. The Baltic Dry Index is in a swan dive down, and that is not good news. It really, Zero Hedge exaggerating once again said the global economy had come to a halt, but the Baltic Dry Index hasn't come to a halt, but it's certainly taken quite a swan dive. Charles Hugh Smith had a great piece, and I wanted to read some of it because I know it affects or describes a dynamic that many people are dealing with in the developed world. And the link is to it is up on the blog. There is another reason for falling velocity. People like me who have saved all their lives realize that their savings, no matter how much, will never throw off enough money to allow retirement unless I live off principal. This is especially so since one can reasonably expect Social Security to be phased out, indexed out, or dropped altogether. Accordingly, I realize that when I get to the point where I can no longer work, I'll be living off capital and not interest. This is an incentive to keep working and not to spend. That was one of his readers who posted to him. So he responds, "Thank you, Mike, for highlighting the devastating long-term impact of the Federal Reserve zero interest rate policy. And P.S., that's one of the reasons why I believe it's so important for the Fed to raise interest rates, because of what it's doing to savers. With the real return on savings near zero or even negative for those who have to pay soaring rents, healthcare insurance premiums, college tuition, those savings for retirement are losing the Red Queen's race. No matter how much they save, the income will be too paltry to support retirement. This has three extremely negative consequences. Those seeking a return above zero are forced to put their savings at risk in boom and bust markets that tend to reward only those who get into the bubble expansion early and exit early. These boom and bust markets tend to savage the assets of the middle class when they blow up, but do little to rebuild those assets in the bubble expansion phase, as prudent investors who were burned in the previous bubble bust shun risk assets. The second negative consequence is the structural pressure on spending, as those saving for retirement must sacrifice current spending to pile up capital to spend during retirement. No wonder the velocity of money is in a free fall. Everyone hoping to retire on more than cat food has set aside more of their earnings because they cannot count on any future earnings on capital. The third consequence is the destruction of middle-class retirement. When a $500,000 nest egg earns a miserable $15,000 a year, 3% annual yield, saving enough to generate a middle-class income in retirement is beyond the reach of what's left of the middle class. Very, very astute comment from Charles Hugh Smith. Ask Catherine. Several people sent us, you know, stories of unbelievably bizarre things going on. We posted them, or some of them, on the website. ABC producer murdered in Belize. Police question husband, wife stabbed to death inside 2.5 million home, exclusive New York suburb. We also posted a story about road rage in Arizona. A woman was in an accident with a Chinese student, got out of her car and shot the Chinese student to death. So we're seeing reports coming all around the country that people are under terrible stress and bad things are happening. And much of the dysfunction and sort of safety issues that you've seen in the poorer neighborhoods is now moving everywhere, as these stories indicate. Hello, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber as of this week. I love your big picture brain, its vision summary, and most importantly, your synergy and synopsis of it all. Well, thank you. My question to you is this. Given that Texas and Colorado are major sinkholes of the black budget money, do you think it's wise to live there, pros and cons appreciated, or is it better just visit? I'm from Colorado and living in Oregon currently. I want to come home back to Colorado, so this is a strategic question of sorts. You are awesome. Thank you for doing what you do. Sincerely yours. Here's the pro. The pro on Texas and Colorado, as a result of being major sinkholes for the black budget money, they are resource rich. There's a tremendous amount of talent, and reinvestment in 3.0 is happening in very significant ways. And within that, within that environment where the reinvestment is happening and there's an effort to attract the top talent, in many ways, there's a lot more freedom and innovation. There's a lot more juice. So that's an advantage. The problem is you need to give the black budget folks a wide berth. Avoid them, certainly avoid coming to their attention. You do not want to cross them or give them trouble or make yourself a target for them in any way. How not to do that is complicated. I'm at a loss because, you know, my head is filled with thousands of expert rules and how to put that into a simple system. I'm not quite sure how to do. I think the big negative is your children. If you look at what happened at Columbine, if you look at what happened to JonBenet Ramsey, the young child who was killed probably in a pedophilia event, if you look at the Colorado shooting a couple years ago, these are all kids who were particularly smart or particularly pretty, and they got pulled into the black budget guys to serve as patsies or sex slaves, drugged, mind control. Now, that can happen anywhere, but when you're in a particularly serious black budget area, I have no way of knowing if it happens more, but it certainly from what I've seen happens. So you have to, if you have kids, you have to have a much, much more powerful covering over them, if you will. I mean, if I was in one of those areas, I'd want to homeschool. I'd want to strictly limit or supervise their access to smartphones and online use. I would keep a very close watch. I'd screen their children, their friends very carefully, and associates like coaches very carefully, and I would account for all of their time. I would just be unbelievably careful. So that's the big negative. If you don't have kids, I think it's a bigger story, but I think the question is if you want to live there, how do you know to give the black budget folks a wide berth? I think when you're in those areas, you need to be a little bit more careful and a little bit appreciate that, you know, that covert forces may be at work. So think of it as a little bit more healthy paranoia. But as I said, it can happen anywhere because there's the covert threads throughout every county in America. Then a wonderful and long message from a subscriber. Part of this is about investment strategy, and I can't give investment strategy advice on the Solaria report. But one of the things they point out is when you understand what's really going on and you're very knowledgeable about what's going on, it's hard to find people. That's, in fact, why we like to have these lunches. This is someone who hasn't plugged into the various people in their particular area, and we're not going to have a lunch there soon. So I'm going to see what I can do to network. We have tried introducing people through the website long ago, and what we found is it's not an environment where, you want to be very, very careful. That's like why I like to have lunches and introduce people to each other in person. Hi, Catherine. In 2016, get ready, get ready, get ready. That's in the wrap up. You stated one of your concerns was the many unanswered questions about Fukushima. Being a new subscriber, I've not heard about these unanswered questions and your concerns. I recently read a sworn court affidavit by Benjamin Fulford containing an incredible report on Fukushima, which can be found here. Is this part of your question about Fukushima, and does this possibility just add to them? I'd like to hear your thoughts. I don't use Fulford as a source. I'm not comfortable doing so. So that's not part of my unanswered questions. I posted a video from Arnie Gunderson on Salary.com this week to sort of help you. I think he's one of the good sources about what's happening in the nuclear industry in Fukushima. Dear Catherine, you had previously mentioned that in your opinion, the growth and development of Las Vegas was connected to the need to launder money in order to fund the operations going on in Area 51. In your opinion, is this why the Mafia were the original owners of the Las Vegas casinos to keep this all underground? I think the Mafia were the original owners because they had the capital and capacity, and they were already doing major money laundering with the U.S. intelligence agencies so they could launder in agency funds and maintain those books. If you're interested in the early years of Las Vegas, Sally Denton and Roger Morris have a wonderful book on Las Vegas, and it describes the fact that one of the lead investors, I think one of the two largest investors in Las Vegas, was the Mormon Church. So, interesting bedfellows. Dear Catherine, I recently read two internet articles by a man named Miles Mathis, and in these articles, he presents some very powerful information indicating that the Manson family Sharon Tate murder was fabricated to discredit the hippie and Vietnam anti-war movement, and in addition, he contends that the O.J. Simpson trial was fabricated, made for TV theater with Nicole Simpson dyeing her hair and playing her sister in media interviews. But interestingly, there apparently is no record of Nicole ever having had a sister. Do you believe that these two events could have been fabricated? I have no idea. Events like this, in my opinion, are either created or taken advantage of to create distractions or, you know, sort of generic smear campaigns of various kinds. So my response is to not let them distract me, and frankly, I ignore them. If everyone would do the same, they would happen much less. In fact, when the O.J. Simpson trial happened, or when the initial incident happened, I had just given away my TV. And so I had no idea what was going on. And about 4 days after it happened, I was sitting at dinner, and everybody kept saying O.J. Simpson. And finally, in the middle of the dinner, I said, "Why is everybody talking about O.J. Simpson?" And everyone at the dinner table looked at me like I had just landed from outer space. And in then hearing their stories, what I realized that in 4 days, they had probably had the story told to them or reinforced by all different forms of media, you know, more than 100 times. And I realized, oh, you know, this is why I really don't need a TV. Anyway, the time that I spend not watching this stuff is the time I spend figuring out how the money works, which is a far more instructive way of going about figuring out what's really going on. New question. Holy crap, this one made me sick to my stomach. Another Afghan boondoggle the administration was trying to hide as they tried to hightail it out of the country. Thankfully, they were caught. Should be some jail time for those who were behind this fiasco. And then they send a link, which I sent in to post on the website. It's a story by Sharon Atkinson about a half a billion dollar purchase of Italian planes for Afghanistan and the Afghani Air Force that turned out not to work and essentially were grounded and then turned into scrap. They were turned into metal and sold for $32,000. So imagine a half a billion getting marked down to $32,000. My thought is that jail time is highly unlikely. It was probably a deal of some kind to keep Italy in NATO or a laundry of some kind. It's impossible to tell. If anyone goes to jail, it will be a DOD contracting officer used as a scapegoat who's not the real perp. So be careful about asking for someone's head, as you're likely to get an innocent party or patsy. That's just how those things work. You have to address it at a higher level. Dear Catherine, in December, Vanguard notified me that the SEC will require in October 2016 all money market funds used for settlement closings to hold those funds in a special federal securities account subject to limitations and penalties. This sounds like the government wants to use the volatility and instability being deliberately created as an excuse to stuff our accounts with U.S. securities with other countries when other countries flee the dollar. Do you see things this way? Would you discuss the relative safety of our retirement and banking accounts from this type of intrusion or outright theft, and outline, if you can, a sense of when to really get alarmed and what potential actions we can take? Thank you for being such a touchstone in these interesting times. I want to research the SEC action and take a look some more. There's real concern about liquidity problems in the money markets, which are absolutely legitimate. If you look at the way the regulators had to and the Fed had to step in during 2008, I think they're trying to make the industry a little bit stronger. Federal securities could help avoid that problem because the problem will tend to be the bank and corporate CDs. At the same time, there's no doubt as the market share of the dollar shrinks, the Fed is constantly and the Treasury is constantly looking for a way to soak up more and more cash. But I would like to do some research, and I think the time is coming when we're going to have a Saleri report on cash management and how to handle this exact issue. So I thank you for your question, but I think it warrants, in fact, a full Saleri report at some point. Hi, Catherine. I've been a member for a while and have been dying to attend a subscriber lunch. I thought reaching out to you when you mentioned you were visiting Rhode Island over the holidays. I'm originally from Newport, Rhode Island. Wait a minute. I'm originally from Newport, Rhode Island, but currently live in Santa Monica. Unfortunately, my travel plans didn't line up over the holidays and just discovered you would be in San Rafael over the weekend for the conference. Unfortunately, I can't attend, but if you happen to be traveling through Southern California area, I would be delighted to attend a lunch. Please keep me posted if there's a possibility. I thank you for your efforts in Saleri. I can't tell you how much I've benefited and grown from your work. Here's to a free and inspired 2016 and beyond. Well, thank you so much for saying that. I love to hear that we're useful. Our next lunch will be in New York City on April 30. If it's anything like last year, it's even worth flying to New York for the weekend. It was so marvelous. I have no plans for Southern California. We did a Palm Springs, Palm Desert a few years ago. I'm planning to be in San Francisco in the fall. So if that comes to fruition, then I'll try and do one there and maybe you can come north. And then someone posted this afternoon, so I thought I'd read it during Ask Catherine. I'm a new subscriber and wish I had joined years ago. The slow burn also applies to the upper middle class and upper classes. Absolutely, you bet. I see it all the time. I connected this partially to a statement I heard in one of your Saleri interviews when you said, sometimes you have to look in the mirror and admit that you were the patsy. Buying into social class and the lifestyle that goes with it and seeking the social acceptance, class reinforcement, does indeed make many people the patsy. Great comment. Couldn't agree more. Another example, many of the individuals who were taken down by Bernie Madoff weren't quite as rich as they found, fooled themselves into thinking. They would have eventually gone bankrupt or close to it, as the saying goes, in the sun also rises. Quote, how did you go bankrupt? Quote, slowly at first, then suddenly. Very astute comment also on the Bernie Madoff situation, which I've had an opportunity to look close at. Catherine, can you please brace yourself for more collapse paranoia than ever in 2016 and put together some kind of special report that will give people a definitive think-it-through process so they will present themselves from being taken in by the chicken little sky is falling influences that are all over the alternative media and in many of the investment commercials on Fox News? Yes, I will do that. There is a need, so thank you very much for that. Let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is The Intern. It's a heartwarming movie. I love heartwarming movies with happy endings. But the reason I recommended it to you is I am finding that there is a remarkable lack of understanding within the general population on three continents, and I only say three because that's, you know, my travels have limited to me to three continents lately. They don't understand the importance of integrity to an economy working, whether it's a company working, a transaction working, change working, transactions working. You know, if you want to change happens through transactions. And for transactions to happen, you have to have integrity. And this is a movie, Robert De Niro plays a guy named Ben, who at the age of 70 becomes an intern, a senior intern in a hot new internet company run by Anne Hathaway. It's very charming and funny, but it does a wonderful job of explaining why integrity never goes out of fashion and why integrity is essential to successful businesses and to a successful economy. I've been so struck by my experiences over the last couple months on this issue that we're doing a Solaria report with a wonderful Australian entrepreneur, Jason Bawden-Smith, on February 11th. We're going to be talking about that. And then I've asked John Rappaport to do his next one with me on this topic, and I'm hoping I'll talk to him Saturday. I hope he agrees. So you're going to be hearing a lot more about integrity and leadership from me. As I said, there's some great books on leadership in the best books for 2016, and integrity is what we need to get our economies going again. So, you know, this is a just do it kind of thing, and the way you get integrity happening is you just do it and you track people like that. Very, very important topic. More on that. Our interview tonight is a long one. It's Joseph Farrell and I chewing through the annual wrap-up. It's one of my favorite things to do. Joseph gives me input before I finalize the wrap-up, and then we chewed through it. So it's a little bit more than 2 hours because there's a lot to cover. We went through the space-based economy. He's been a major contributor to my thinking on this topic, and for me it was a major breakthrough. What an experience it was researching and writing this wrap-up. I've been trying for many years to integrate my understanding what's happening with the economy with what's happening in space. And it's, when I tell you, it was complicated, but I kind of feel like I got the framework. Now, there are more unanswered questions than there are answers to the questions, but at least I feel like I've got my sort of arms around it and got a framework for it. That's what I wrote in the wrap-up. And then Farrell and I chew through both the space-based economy, and then we talk through the trends and stories and a little bit about what's coming up in 2016. So very useful. If you haven't had a chance to read the wrap-up, I hope you will this week. We hope to have the PDF up. We've taken some extra time with it, so it's really quite extraordinary. So we hope to have the PDF up early next week, if not tomorrow. When it goes up, we'll let you know. And I would really encourage you to read the wrap-up and then listen to Dr. Farrell and I chew through it. Okay, we got a lot of great stuff coming up, so let me just walk through the Ford calendar. Next week, Rambis is back. His interview, which was written special for Rambis because he's a very secretive guy, that we did in October was so popular. I said, Rambis, will you come back quarterly in 2016? And he said, yes. Very excited. And he's been doing amazing charts at Rambis Chartology. And I know some of you are subscribers at Rambis Chartology as well, so you know what I'm talking about. I sent him a whole bunch of questions, a lot of questions about what's going on in the – what the charts say about commodities, what they say about oil, what they say about precious metals, what they say about the dollar, what they say about equities. I also talked to him about some of the hedging issues, and he came back and said – I'm going to answer it all, but the big question I'm going to ask is, are we in a deflational spiral? Because this is really, the deflation is global, and so I want to look at, is it a spiral down, and ask that question as well. So this is going to be really rich. Then on February 4th, the Saker from the Vineyard Saker, I think the most informative coverage of Russia and Russia's relationship to the United States and the rest of the world. He's a retired military analyst turned computer software developer, and he's lived on in Russia, in Europe, and in the United States, now in the United States. And I think his website is one of the best on the Russian situation. So a great discussion of Russia, their point of view, and what's happening between Russia and the United States on February 4th. Then on February 11th, Entrepreneurship for Everyone with Australian entrepreneur Jason Bawden-Smith. We're going to be talking about his new book, but also why it is so important to get everyone, but particularly the young generation, to sort of embrace for-profit entrepreneurship as the way to find sustainable change. And then February 18th, Franklin Sanders is going to come back for the Precious Metals Market Report. There's been a lot going on in precious metals, and I always love to touch base with him about it. So it's a very exciting lineup, and we're lining up even more so. It's I think the first quarter is going to be, on the Solaria Report, is going to be really juicy. So until next week with Rambis, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, 2016 is going to be a really good year to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.